Coffee Time Wednesdays with the Prairie Farm Podcast.
Can't hit us with the jingle.
Welcome back to the Prairie Farm Podcast. Coffee Time Wednesday. If you are listening to this today, oh, who is it? Jake Hofer gave us, someone gave us advice, said, hey, if your audience doesn't know you, we don't know who's talking. Because we do a bad job of introducing. So the person I'm pointing to is Kent, and his voice is deep. And my friend Bria thought he was an old 65-year-old man with a big white beard, like Santa Claus, when she first heard his voice. Because it's such an epic deep voice.
It's only because you're that wise. You open your mouth and they're like, okay, this dude knows stuff. Like, he's got to be an old man. He's so wise.
Well, I do turn 35 in August, which gives me the opportunity to run for president by November. I mean, I'm going to be a little short on, campaign time, but look at our options right now.
you have my vote. Yeah, that's right. I don't even know you that well, but like, you have my vote.
And then, of course, we've got Joy hanging out with us today. She'll be on or off with us. And then David is not with us today. He is working on.
He is the only one working at the farm right now.
Yeah, he's the only one doing his job. Stuff.
This is our farm podcast where we all work on the farm, except right now.
We just drink coffee. Talk on podcast.
Hey, it's just as important. We got to fuel first. Right.
Yeah, that is fair. But coffee time Wednesdays, we're here to all bring a topic. And I figured Kent should go first. I'm bringing the spice today.
Nick is bringing the spice. And I'm glad because yesterday Nick was grumpy Nick.
Dude.
There's a level below go Nick, and that is grumpy Nick.
Yeah, so go Nick, I guess, is almost rock bottom because I'm trying to get stuff done. So I've got no time for games or jokes, and Ken always has time for games and jokes.
Yeah, well, and I mean, look at Nick. Just look at him. You know, he just looks like a fun guy, right? He's wearing a comic book T-shirt.
You
and he's
have
almost
a contagious
30 years
smile.
Old.
Thank you.
That's right. He's always laughing. So then all of a sudden, when that goes away, it's like you were planning on it being a sunny day and you wake up and it's not only a rainy day, it's a foggy, rainy day in the Arctic
windy.
Circle during December.
The worst.
I mean, it's just dark.
Do you know,
bleak.
I don't know how appropriate this is, but I, as you guys can see, am Asian. So I'm going to talk about this. Do you know who Stephen He is? He's a YouTuber who talks about Asian parents. And
I don't know how to respond right now.
Yeah, you're
do
not
I know who
to say
he
anything.
Is?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Yeah. No, he's great. He talks, but it's so relatable that. But he's like, so I was gonna say, I'm like an Asian dad who's disapproving of his son just the whole time, just ready to get stuff done. Stephen, he always jokes about his dad being like, "When I was 9 years old, I was already running my own business." Anyway. I don't think I can
go.
Yeah, go Nick is a bad thing, but depressed or down or grumpy Nick, oh, you just want to get away.
Oh.
You should just keep like an ice bath at the farm, and that way if like you're in that headspace, just go dunk yourself in freezing cold water
That's
for 5 minutes.
That's actually a pretty good idea.
Guaranteed boost mood.
That is a pretty good idea. Yeah, because ice baths do. They really get you going.
That's like, if that's my option, if I'm in a really bad mood and I can't move my body, like go for a walk or lift weights, it's like, can I get in freezing cold water for 5 minutes and just be miserable?
Oh,
because
yeah.
By the time I'm out, I'm like, you know what? I feel better.
Yes.
I'm the closest thing we have to an ice bath at the farm, which I think would only decrease Nick's mood levels, would be if I just sprayed him with the hose from the... He like walks out of the office, just spray him right in the side of the head.
I'd probably get in the truck and go home. I wouldn't say anything.
Wait, do you feel better?
Nicholas?
I did that for you.
Oh my goodness. So if you're talking about us seeing each other or look at us, it is because we are finally getting things recorded on. We've been wanting to get the podcast on video for a long time. We attempted when we first started and just didn't have the skill set. Kent and I lacked it deeply. It wasn't even close. But now that Joy's hanging out with us, she's able to do it. She's put in a bunch of work. And so I don't know where we'll be posting it, but we'll keep you posted on where we'll have it posted.
Hopefully the Instatube. Unless this doesn't turn out, then this will be really embarrassing.
I'm sure it'll be good. But we also have a dusty old YouTube channel that we keep picking up subscribers on.
Yeah.
Nicholas did a great job with those videos back in the day.
We're going to undust it.
Yeah, let's blow the dust off that bad boy. And
we've got, I did some like almost everything you need to know about, which is like basically videos about like
singular species.
Yeah, right? Like butterfly milkweed, or I think I did rattlesnake master, mm-hmm. Cydotes grama, a bunch of those. Like, are they transplantable? How do you get them to start from seed? Like, what did the Native Americans have a relationship with them before, you know, we were around? How much water do they need? And then we also did vlogs, and the vlogs were fun, but they took like 10 hours to do, and 10 hours out of a 45-hour week is a lot of hours.
Yeah. So, but man, there were some funny moments, especially when Peyton was in the videos.
Dude. Yeah. So we have our hopes up that we can bring those back. If you really want them to come back.
Yeah. You want to go back to some Hoxsey Gold, go back into the Peyton era on the vlog. There's some good stuff there.
Yeah. He's working in solar now, in case anybody wants to have an update. He used to work in solar, and he's back at it. So,
yep.
Anyway.
Yeah, my topic.
Hey, before you start, I'm going to make you hold your mic like this, because now there's a camera at your face. That's right. Like, I don't want to look at this.
get a good glimpse of my mug here.
Yeah, just like tilt it like this and hold it down.
Beautiful. Yes, I need to. I'm not good with the visual side of audio.
Let me do my hair. Are we started?
It's fine. It looks like crap. Just keep going.
Nicholas's glasses are just like glaring straight at the camera right now. We can't see anything. So I was thinking of what's going on right now on the farm and just in the prairie world. There's a lot of cool things that are blooming right now. Not a ton. I think this is so the most beautiful timeline for the prairie is probably like August. September's really nice too, but you want to find that time when you have flowers that are in bloom while grasses are at their peak height and starting to ripen. And that's probably August, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
I mean, because the grass is really ripen in September through, pretty much September.
But I like, besides Blazing Star, my favorite flowers bloom in May and early June.
Right. Well, and what I was going to say is nice about this time of year is there's not a ton of early bloomers like in, you know, April, May, early June time frame. And so they stand out so much when you see them, like when you're driving down the road. And right now, Dame's Rocket is really the kind of the star. When you're driving down the road, you see something really bright. How would you describe that? It's not quite purple. It's kind of a pinky purple.
It's a light purple.
It's not irises. Don't think it's irises. Nicholas and I thought irises were something cool. They were a weird colored iris. But there's also wild geranium blooming right now.
Canada anemone's almost there.
It could be. I haven't looked at our field.
Ohio spiderwort. Earlier Ohio spiderworts.
That'll be more into early June, I think.
No. On my drive to work.
You're seeing some? Okay. Yeah,
you start to see them. You like start seeing them about now, and then they bloom every day through June. It's great.
Yeah, they're a beautiful one. At Golden Alexander's, it's not a wild parsnip that you're seeing right now. Although I did see a wild parsnip, a really early wild parsnip, when we were burning the other day, which is actually going to be my main topic. So not only do you have these early bloomers coming in, but it's for us at Hoxsey, the time of year that we're burning. Now, if you have a CRP, some CRP acres, this you had to be done burning by, I think, May 10th. is the cutoff. And it's best if you're in a situation like much of Iowa is, where your number one problem for your CRP stand is a cool season grass. It's good to do like a late April, early May burn to push back that cool season grass and allow those warm season grasses to come back. So that's why we're burning so late, because we're burning monocropped fields, right? We're burning, you know, a big blue stem production field. We're burning a Indian grass production field or a switchgrass production field. And so we're not worried about hurting forbs. If you have, if cool season grasses aren't your biggest problem and just maintaining forb diversity is, then a fall burn after harvest, of course. Don't light that field of ethanol on fire. That would be bad. But, you know, or a winter burn would be good, or a really early spring burn could be good for those forbs, because there are a lot of forbs that, like, for instance, Rattlesnake Master, man, I bet that was starting to green up in late March. And even though we don't harvest Rattlesnake Master until like late August, it just has a long growing season.
And it's got a cool start to the plant because it looks like a small aloe plant.
It does.
Yeah. And then it shoots up a stem, and then it gets a flower later on.
And the flowers are wonky too. Like it is the most my favorite. It's my
favorite.
Native. Yeah,
it's my favorite forb.
To me, that forb looks like Arizona. How Arizona feels to me. I'm like, you look dry and spiky. And
it's true, though, like a desert plant.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it looks like one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we were burning. And what's interesting about burning this time of year is there's some cool things you can find in May when you're burning. And so we burned, I think, a 40-acre field last Friday. And Carol does, I mean, Nicholas and I have talked about this. We feel pretty worthless when we're burning with Carol because that man is a one-man burn crew. He burns more acres by himself in 30 minutes than it takes a whole team of, you know, like the, you know, we're friends with these people, but we can make fun of our friends a little bit. You know, like the people that wear like the whole burn clothes and everything.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like the yellow shirt suit, and the helmet.
Yeah.
In case the fire hits your head really hard or something. I don't know. But, you know what
just
I mean?
Roast them. Just give them the old elbow while they're down.
I still love you all. I still love you all. But you know how they got like all the burn duds? Then you got Carol wearing his black New Balances, his Wrangler jeans, and a Carhartt t-shirt. And he's lighting up 40 acres at a time by himself and fighting the fire on a Allis Chalmers 185. But anyways.
He's a specimen.
Oh, no, yeah. I mean, he'll like, because
he just knows how to back
burn. That a blowtorch on the tractor, but it's like down by the wheel.
Yep.
And he has to go down there to turn it on and off. So, and he's not like running. So the fire's going and he needs to turn it off. He'll like get off the tractor slowly, stand in the fire, turn it off, get back on the tractor slowly, and then drive away. It's like, it's crazy. Kent and I are like a quarter mile away, like, oh my goodness, it's so hot on my face. Oh my
word. And there's just like he controls the fire so well. He's an expert back burner. He just knows how to read the wind perfectly and the right timing and everything. But we still are there because there are times when fire will cross a water line or something like that, and you got to go put the small amount of flames out with a shovel or a backpack spray or something. So I was doing that with a shovel, and scoop shovels are an excellent tool for burning. And I was smacking out some flames, just smothering them. And right as I was dropping the shovel, I saw a giant yellow morel. But it was like one of those things where I had too much momentum already going by the time I saw it.
Oh,
and
no.
I'm just like, no! It just crushed this huge yellow morel. Probably would have been one of the biggest I ever found. And I'm like, no, no, no. Picking up the ashes. I can save this. You know?
Like it's your dog or something. Right. It's going to be okay.
I didn't mean it. So I started looking around. I'm like, well, if there's one, there could be more. And oh, were there. I think we found we brought home 41 morels. And that was just in 20 some minutes of picking them. You know, it was crazy. They were everywhere. And then the next day I found this awesome shed. I am a obsessive shed hunter. I love shed hunting as much as I love anything other than my kids and my wife, of course. But I found this sweet shed. And the reason why I like a burn shed is because I find a lot of sheds, and a lot of them are just the regular old, you know. Ooh, now you get to hear what it sounds like too. They're just the regular old non-burned sheds. You know, your run-of-the-mill non-burned shed.
Yeah. How boring.
But this thing, look at the color on that. It's like nice and gold. And this is a fresh shed. I know because I worked in that field last spring after we burned it.
And I
covered every square
cooked
inch of it.
Cooked perfectly. Seared perfectly.
And it smells.
That was like a roasted chestnut to a squirrel. Yeah. And you just took it home.
And all the little antler tips are all nice and charred and everything, which is just cool. So that was a cool find. But back to morels, and I know I'm taking too much time here. I've heard that morels, a good place to look for morels is in burns. And
like after the burn.
Right.
Oh.
And there's truth to that, but not in the way that you might think. So I was doing some research on this, and I went
to the shed and the other things weren't your main topic.
Morels. Morels. So I did some research on this and went to the Missouri I think it's the, I think they have a DNR, not a game and parks or whatever, or fish, wildlife and parks. I think it's a DNR, Missouri DNR website. And they're like, yeah, look in areas that have been recently burned. And so I was doing some more digging. Well, it turns out, I think that is true. Like the morels we have here in the Midwest and further east, they will grow in areas that are burned, but not in response to the burning, like immediately, like we burn today, come back, you know, in 3 days and there will be morels everywhere. I don't think that's what's going on, but it is instead because that ground is regularly disturbed by fire. It promotes morel growth year after year. And I did find some morels at this place last year when we burned too. But in doing more research, out west is where that's really a thing, because there are species in the west that are called burn morels. This was on, I was reading on the Modern Forager website and I think the University of Oregon's website on this, where people will specifically go into an area that was recently burned and the heat from the fire stimulates mushroom growth shortly thereafter. And you can go and find morels and fresh burns. Now, this, is, of course, is not going to be a prairie burn there. It's going to be a forest burn. But pretty cool, the tie between morels and fire and just another one of those connections, and also what's going on the prairie farm these days.
You want to know something?
You didn't care about anything I just said.
No, no. I've never eaten a morel.
What? Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Do you have a desire to?
No wonder
to,
you were so grumpy yesterday.
I was like pissed you got all the morels. I had meant to go back there. And no, it's... well, one, I didn't like mushrooms till college. So when I was younger and people were mushroom hunting, I was like, ugh, you know.
Gross.
Yep. And then I got back from college and I just have... I've never gone. And it's like, you can't be like, hey, Kent, where do you go? Where do you go mushroom hunting? You literally have to have either a parent,
you have to have the plug,
or a very, very good friend. Like even pretty decent friends.
I would gladly take you mushroom hunting, and I'd gladly take you shed hunting.
If this makes you feel better, we have a spot here on the farm. My mom and I are like classic gals where we will just go out in May and check out the wildflowers. We're like, oh, the bluebells are popping and the Dutchman's breeches. And we're like, yeah, yeah. Never have I once found a mushroom on the south facing slope timber. Not once in my entire life. And we've had friends that they'll be like, hey, can we go mushroom? We're like, yeah, go. We never find them. And they're like, okay, you know, and they're like, yeah, we didn't find any. And this year, my dad let someone go down there and he found like 30.
Oh, wow.
And he comes back and he's like, I don't believe you that you've never found them down there. And I'm like, you found like what? I was like beside myself because I'm like, I'm not joking. We never find morels down there. And this year they were like, he was showing me pictures and I'm just like, I hope you had fun because you might never come back.
Yeah, that's right.
I hope you enjoyed yourself. But yeah. I don't know like what you're saying with the burns. I'm like, did something happen ecologically that like changed that? Because I'm not kidding. In the past, we've never had mushrooms out there. Granted, there's a lot more trees that are falling. We don't do a lot of timber management. So I think there's some dead oaks. And isn't it elms? Is it oaks and elms that they kind of grow on?
I mean, it's kind of funny because when you're reading on that, they like start listing. They'll start with elms. They'll be like, yeah, you got to check elms. And then they'll be like, next bullet point. But ash trees, they're good too. And then if you can find some old apple trees and some oak trees and some cedar trees.
So just
some,
trees.
It's like, okay, yeah.
It's a dead tree. There might be a mushroom on it. Yeah. But no joke, like we've never found mushrooms down there. And then there was a ton this year. So
man,
well, have at it, Nick.
Something to,
if you will try them, we can go out there and we can mushroom hunt it next week.
All right. We can. We'll take a video.
I think it's too, you know, we talked in our last coffee time about how it's been we're still considered to be in a drought year right now, but we have had
a couple of rains since then.
A couple good rains since then. And I don't know.
I wonder, do we have any on the horizon?
Thursday, but we're getting past. I think when Carol and I found those morels, it was probably like one of the last days of mushroom season.
Yeah. You're getting too warm.
Right. Soil starts to get too warm.
Mushrooms are wild. I remember Neil deGrasse Tyson teaching me that mushrooms are closer to humans and
in their DNA.
I don't know if it was DNA or in the like, he was saying like mushrooms split off from plants like closer to when humans split off. Like they're closer to humans.
Oh, he's talking about cladograms.
I don't know, dude. You got
what?
This. Yeah, it was pretty gnarly might so be
it's
the
cannibalism
right. Yeah, yeah.
Well, we're eating mushrooms do like, and they're like our seventh cousin.
Oh. Man, I don't know where to go from there, but do you have a topic?
I was like, do you want to go? You already had one picked out. You go ahead.
What time are we at? It's late.
I have no idea.
Anyway. No, Joy, you go. You go. We got
okay.
time for all three.
This is one that I sent Kent at some point last week because I was just like, this torques me off. And there's not that many things that torque me off. My name's Joy. Like, the Lord knew what he was doing when he gave me that name because, like, I don't get that. I don't get mad very often. But I saw this and I was mad and I sent it to Kent right away. And I was like, ah! And he was like, oh, great coffee time topic. So this article from Daily Mail, which I don't love to begin with.
Oh, yes.
Said Tyson Foods dumps 87 billion gallons of toxic waste, including cyanide, blood, and feces into U.S. rivers and lakes, enough to fill 132,000 Olympic-size pools.
Whoa.
And this was dated May 5th of this year. For those that don't know, Tyson Foods, right? All your Dino chicken nuggies that you're feeding your children comes from Tyson.
I had a good friend who worked at a Tyson chicken plant, and he was third shift, which was cleaning shift. So you had two shifts of processing and one shift of cleaning.
How could you make life harder on yourself?
No kidding.
Oh, man.
Is he a vegetarian now?
he like, I don't know if he still does, for a long time, we're like thinking about a Tyson chicken bag. Like, didn't want
to. Serious?
He can't do it. He and I also inhaled 40 chicken nuggets one night at McDonald's. So,
if you're hungry enough, it doesn't matter. Yeah. But if you think about it and you think about the process of the animals being raised and what those conditions are like in those plants, you're just like, yeah, I'd rather just raise my own chickens and slaughter them myself. Oh, like the thought of that is way more stomach appealing to me than.
Yeah, he told me one of the greatest feelings of his life was the last day he walked out of there. He's I'm done forever. But anyway, so why is Tyson doing this? Why are they taking a poop in our rivers?
I don't know. I didn't look more into why, but I'm sure if they've been confronted and asked, they're not going to say we did it because, we didn't have room for all the toxicness.
That's,
you know
what
I mean?
It's expensive to deal with all that.
Exactly.
Waste.
Like, it's one of those things
where. Do you want your kids to have to pay a little bit more for their chicken nuggets? Because that's what's going to happen.
Exactly. Right. They're never going to come out and say that. But then here we are with terrible water quality already and things not always necessarily trending in a positive direction. And then we read an article like this, and from someone myself coming from a water quality background, this just really torques me off because I worked so hard to implement things conservation more in the agriculture space to improve water quality. And then one company would have outdone my entire career's worth probably of water quality in a single day or however many days it took to dump 87 billion gallons.
I wonder if that's in the EPA did a study, they got called in. So the EPA did a backlog study and it was over the past 10 years, you've dumped this much, or it's there's leaks, you know, they did the math and that's guts were leaking out of places that one co-op that was leaking fertilizer.
Oh yeah.
So
down in the Nishnabotna River.
But I'm sure there's because I don't think that's cheaper. No one's scurrying around with a mask at night, being I'm gonna dump these chickens out in this river. You know, that's not. But I think there's probably a leak, or there's there was a creek nearby that they knew about that they didn't feel dealing with. So every time it rained, they got washed out. I don't know, but.
Yeah, I think thoughts. So I saw this after Joy sent it. I started seeing it several places. The news story, was breaking in different. So I think Daily Mail was one of the first places to post about it. But I saw it in a few other places. But I think we should continue talking about this story. Let's answer some of these questions because it is a fair assessment there. I don't think you would just do this just to, you really thought you were going to get away with it or something. But
I think the fine that they'll probably receive for doing it does not outweigh the profit that they're making from doing it. Because 87 billion gallons, you have to haul that off. You know, how do you, the trucking expense to remove that from the facility cannot be less than it cannot be more than what it would cost.
That's think about it. Let's say, oh, I made $10 billion on that chicken and I get fined, even if you got fined, and let's say that was your net profit was $10 billion. Even if you got fined $9 billion, it's like, that's not enough, because now exactly. You're saying, oh, $9 billion is just the cost of doing business. We still make $1 billion doing this. Mm-hmm. Great. Mm-hmm. It's got to be a fine that outweighs profit.
Right.
Otherwise, there's not going to be any, right. Especially with a company that can handle something like that. You get a small business and you outweigh their profit for the year, you're going to kill them.
Exactly. And a big business like that, though, that's nothing. Know. That's just...
Then go to the old Papa Banks and be like, hey, can you give me a line of credit for $1 billion? You know, this is wild. Man, yeah. what do you think would change big companies doing that?
You know, I hate the word restrictions and regulations because I'm like a patriot, libertarian at heart. But like, it's one of those things where our water quality shouldn't be political. It should be the one thing that is completely unpolitical. And if you're polluting our rivers and streams, I want to see a little bit more lashback. And I don't want to see there being certain treatments that go towards larger companies for smaller companies. If you're polluting our water, there need to be consequences.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I also think that, what do you call it? Like, man, totally brain farting here. I feel like with,
I can smell it.
Yeah. Stinks.
I've been hanging around you too much. I'm making dad jokes.
All the ice cream. Oh, I got plenty of
dad jokes,
dude. No, so I feel like there should be an understanding from consumers when companies say, "Hey, actually, we're going to charge more for your food," and I think that's okay because we get enough food as like a country. We eat plenty. We intake plenty of calories. You know, there's plenty going around.
We do.
So if food costs a little more, so that the bigger companies can make sure they're not in the red. You know, then I want us to be okay with that. I want us as consumers to say, I will pay a little more out of pocket to make sure.
And that, realize that that is why they're paying more.
Yes,
they're not paying more just because there's a greed associated
with
it, because of course there is some of that. But they're paying more so that our river systems and our water can be cleaner, so that we as a society and our conservation aspect of the world is being improved. So you have to pay a little bit more for your dino chicken nuggies.
And I would love, because if companies can charge more because of that, then we get around the government being the middleman. You know, having more taxes go into paying these companies, because the government's so inefficient at divvying out money.
It's the worst.
So if we can just give it straight to the companies, I think that is the better way to go. But
you didn't think I was going to bring up such a political topic.
No,
no more topics.
No. I'm just enjoying listening to you guys riff on this. But yeah, I mean, I feel the same way that, and Nicholas and I have talked about this quite a bit in the past on, you know, do we really want it to be the government dropping the sledgehammer? Because we are the, you know, we probably, if I don't have a political affiliation on purpose, but I would probably tend to be closer to libertarian, but
if you're a prairie person, I feel like you're naturally a patriot.
Yeah, that's right. But there are, I mean, we have a government for a reason, right? And whether we like that or not, there are things that we do like that the federal government provides for us. How about national security, for one, right? And there are times when, whether it be federal or state level, we need, you know, we need a law that there are punishments for if you break. And there's all kinds of examples that exist that we're okay with the law stepping in and saying, if you do this, we're going to drop the hammer on you. And where does that change come from, though? That comes from all the constituents under that law. And so a lot of these companies are able to get away with, whether it be something on the scale of, you know, dumping the however many gallons of fertilizer into the Nishnabotna, or something on the scale of this that we're talking about with Tyson. They know that we're going to weather the storm and we're going to be just fine. And as soon as the news cycle turns over, because most people don't care. And, or at least they don't care enough to do anything about it. Right. And like, that's a rebuke to us, a rebuke to myself. Like, I should care enough to be like, you know what? I'm not buying your products anymore. If that's how you're going to, that's how you're going to treat, the water that I'm supposed to brush my teeth with, brew my Wild Rivers coffee with, give my kids a bath with, you know, mm-hmm. fill up their swimming pool with in the summertime. You know, if that's how you're going to treat me, well then, sorry, you know, I'm not going to give you my money anymore. And if enough people start doing that, that's going to, or start pushing for their legislators to come up with a better way of dropping the hammer on these things like we've been talking about. We really can't, we can just expect more of the same.
Man. Well, this has been a good one, guys.
See, yeah, now you definitely have to run for president after that. Yeah. You're gonna be three-five.
Santa Claus, Kent.
Can you? I have no desire to run for president, just for clarity. Yeah.
But it's always the people that don't that like should. You know what I mean? It's always the people that shouldn't run for politics where I'm like, I would totally vote you as a county supervisor.
Yeah, but part of the reason that makes them would be a good county supervisor is that they don't want to be. You know, part of the reason that makes someone good in power is that they don't
want
to be.
They don't want it. They don't want the power.
Yeah. Well, Abraham Lincoln said that, and I'm paraphrasing, but basically, any man, he said, don't be on the internet. he said, any man can go through hard things. If you truly want to see what's inside of a man, give him power. And because when people say like, oh, money changed you, power changed you, I don't think that's true. I think power revealed what's going on in there. Yeah. It amplified. I agree. Anyway, this has been a good time. It's been a long time. Yeah. This has been a long podcast episode. Thank you, Joy, for setting all this up. And we will talk to you all next time.